Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, and welcome to the August episode of Third Thursdays. I'm Ruthie Goodbow, a shareholder with Ogletree Deacons and co-chair of our firm's traditional labor practice. Each month, through the Third Thursday podcast, I bring you news, commentary, and hopefully some insight into issues related to labor relations, labor law, and the relationships between employers, employees, and in some instances, labor unions. I can't believe it's August already, and the summer in many parts of the country is almost over. Although I'm sad about summer's end, it also signals one of my favorite times of the year, football season. Myself, I'm more of a college football fan. But I won't mention my alma mater or my team because I don't want to alienate any of our listeners. So now you're probably wondering, how does all of this relate to labor? Well, at the end of every summer, I kind of take stock in my team. I see what new players are on the team, check out the coaching staff, and I look at the schedule. And I do this so I know what to expect. I tell myself, I do this so I don't let my expectations run wild, but also so I can prepare myself as a great fan for each game. Labor is a lot like that, I think. We watch for National Labor Relations Board decisions to see how they come down on a variety of issues, and then use that information to inform our own decisions, strategies, and tactics. At least, I hope y'all do that on some level. And frankly, that's one of the goals of our Third Thursday cast, to give you some useful perspective. Usually in these casts, I focus on just one topic. I'm going to take a little bit different approach on today's cast because there are two decisions out there, two recent decisions, that I think are worth mentioning, but may not warrant the whole cast. Our discussion today will also be different because instead of talking about National Labor Relations decisions, I'm going to be talking about two court decisions. And so what that means is the National Labor Relations Board issued a decision, and then one of the parties appealed to the circuit court. So the first case I want to start talking about actually started in 2014. And as you probably know, oftentimes these cases take a long time to work their way through the system. So this case is Consolidated Communications and Local 702 of the IBEW. Here's what happened. During a 2012 strike, a striking employee was driving along the highway. There was another striking employee driving along the same highway, but in a separate car. The two of them spotted two managers driving on that same highway in a company truck, and that gave those employees an idea. According to the union, these two employees decided they would follow the managers to wherever they were going to see if it was a place where they could picket. As this plan progressed, however, the two employees in their separate cars boxed in the manager's trucks, one on the left side of the truck, and one in front of the company truck. They drove at the speed limit, but they did not let the truck pass for about a minute or about a mile. At one point, this blocking in, this action, caused a traffic jam behind them, so the traffic began to back up behind the company truck. Eventually, the managers got off the highway and went to wherever they were going, but they went by a different route. As a result of this conduct, the employer discharged the two striking employees. Now, one of the employees' case was settled, so they weren't involved in this recent decision, but there was one remaining employee who had been discharged, and the discharge was being challenged. So, of course, the union challenged that discharge, saying that that activity was protected as it was part of a strike, and based on this argument that they were just following the managers. And in that case initially, when it was before the ALJ, the ALJ found that the behavior wasn't severe enough to lose the protection of the act or for her to be fired. And the NLRB upheld the ruling. The case was appealed to the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit remanded, stating that the board didn't use the right legal standard in determining whether the conduct could coerce or intimidate the managers. On remand, in issuing its decision and finding and upholding the discharge, the NLRB actually cited statistics about fatal highway accidents to support their determination that the National Labor Relations Act should be interpreted in this case in light of the public safety risks or the public safety interests at stake. In essence, it held that the right to strike does not give immunity to strikers for all of its actions, and that this high-speed maneuvering on a highway put the managers at risk. Interestingly, the fact that the maneuver was brief, about a minute, about a mile, didn't really make a difference to the board, because they said a split-second miscalculation by any of the parties could have caused serious injuries or even death. One point I want to make, really can't go without comment, is the difference in the makeup of the board when the case originally was before it. So in 2014, when the NLRB initially reviewed this case and found the conduct was protected, that was an Obama-era board. In 2018, after remand back to the board, we have the Trump board reviewing. So now we have the board upholding the discharge, and so the case is then appealed to the Seventh Circuit. And last Friday, the Seventh Circuit upheld the board's finding. There, the circuit court focused on the intent of the striking employees and found that these two employees set out to intimidate the managers and, in fact, wanted them to worry about their safety. This undermined the union's claim that the employees were only trying to follow the truck to set up a roving picket. And the reason why this undermined that claim, if you haven't figured it out already, is because, as the court said, the employees were following from the front. Remember, we had one car in front, one car on the side, and the court found that these two employees were, in fact, trying to impede their progress, and that these facts showed a plan to try and intimidate these managers. And so because this showed a plan, as opposed to what the board has sometimes called animal exuberance, which the board sometimes excuses, they were not going to excuse this behavior. So animal exuberance, when the board uses it, refers to more spontaneous, uncontrolled reaction to something that doesn't have the intent to intimidate, as the court found here. So why is this case important? First, the case is important because it illustrates the shifting analytical perspective under the Trump board. We all expected this, but now we are actually seeing it in action. Second, although this case deals with the behaviors of strikers specifically, and strikers have historically been given a wide berth to engage in a variety of what we otherwise might consider uncivil, threatening, or even unlawful behavior, I think it sheds some light on how other types of concerted activity that may have an intent to harm would be viewed by the current board. This case is also helpful, of course, for those employers facing strikes, which have been on the rise in recent years. Employers often have to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to address strike misconduct through the disciplinary process. And I think this case helps you look at the circumstances of the misconduct to make a more informed prediction as to whether or not the current board would uphold disciplinary action. Another case I want to mention today was decided on August 1st. That was out of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. That case is Hendrickson versus the NLRB. This case has to do with statements made by an employer during a union organizing campaign. Two things were said that are at issue in this particular charge. First, in a plant-wide letter, the employer cautioned employees that contract negotiations would start from scratch. The other statement that was at issue was in a PowerPoint that was shown to employees during captive audience meetings. And that statement was, relationships suffer in a union shop. The NLRB found these two statements were unfair labor practices because they coerced employees in the exercise of their Section 7 rights. Now let's put this matter in a temporal perspective as well. The conduct occurred during a campaign in the summer of 2015. So again, this is an Obama-era board decision that's at issue. So let's fast forward to the Sixth Circuit, and let's look at that. I'm doing the air quotes, from scratch statement. Now, before I tell you how the court decided, let me share with you how I've always advised clients on the from scratch statement. While we all know that employees can get more, the same, or less through bargaining, I've always counseled clients not to say bargaining starts from scratch. That's because there are cases out there, and in certain circumstances, my belief is that that phrase, starting from scratch, can be taken to mean that the slate is wiped clean or that bargaining begins with a blank sheet of paper. Two more phrases that I've often cautioned clients not to use. Why? Because those phrases, from scratch, wiped clean, blank sheet of paper, they seem to imply whatever employees have at the time bargaining begins goes away and negotiations start with no history. That's not the case, of course, and although it sounds like semantics, bargaining actually starts with the terms and conditions that employees have at the time recognition is certified, and then they can either go up, go down, or stay the same. The Sixth Circuit basically said, but what they said is, you can't look at that phrase in a vacuum. You have to review the comment in the context in which it's presented. Here, the employer was using the statement to illustrate the risks inherent in bargaining, that more, same, less concept. The court also considered the use of that statement as a counter to the union's apparent promise that unionization would automatically lead to only better terms and conditions of employment. As for the relationship suffers statement, the court found the comment could only be reasonably understood as elaborating and summarizing the employer's opinion that union representation is not effective. In terms of what we should take away from this decision, I think the court said it best, and this is a quote. Distinguishing protected speech from unprotected threats can be difficult because the only effective way of arguing against the union is for the company to point out to the workers the adverse consequences of unionization. And this is a challenge that we all face, that any employer, any lawyer faces when there is a union organizing campaign. And as the court noted, that distinction often turns, as it did in this case, on the context in which the statements are made and whether the employer communicates those consequences as being either outside of the employer's control completely or purely within the employer's own volition. What do I mean by that, or what does the court mean by that? It means we have to be careful, not only in what we say and how we say it, but what else we say and do around those statements. Starting from scratch is not a per se violation of the act. There are cases, long history of cases, some deciding one way, some deciding the other. But standing alone, that statement, that phrase, may give employees the misconception that their current wages and benefits will be taken away immediately if a union is voted in. So here's my thought on this. If you're going to use this type of phrase, define what you mean. Put it in context. For example, you could say something like, what I mean by that phrase is that your terms and conditions of employment will go on the table, will all be on the table when we start bargaining. They could go up, they could go down, or they could stay the same, but they all go on the table. Or another example might be, when I say starting from scratch or a blank piece of paper, I mean that when we are negotiating for a first contract, we start from the beginning and we have to bargain for every provision and work. My concern, see, is with catchy phrases like starting from scratch or somebody standing up and holding up a blank piece of paper is that you may be knowledgeable enough, you may be able to articulate the context around those statements, but first-line managers and supervisors may glom on to those catchy phrases and not share the explanatory backstory. That's why I try to avoid these kind of catchphrases, ad phrases that may be taken out of context. The court here applied a similar analysis to the statement about relationships suffering. The slide actually talked about cultural change and flexibility being replaced by inefficiency in addition to that relationship statement. Again, while employers have a free speech right, it can't be laced with threats or coercion. The easy way, I think, to avoid this trap is not to communicate that these things will definitely happen, but communicate them as possible consequences. There's a big difference between saying relationships could suffer and relationships will suffer. Another way to look at it is to say something like, at my old job, where there was a union, relationships did suffer. Again, context and supporting statements are key to avoiding these types of charges, or if you get a charge, they're key to defending them. Explain why you have concerns about things that might change if a union came in, how those changes could impact client or customer relations, how you're concerned about how relationships might be affected. And then back up your statements with those faux statements. Remember, we can always share facts, opinions, and experiences. Frankly, I think that type of communication that comes from an educational perspective is more effective anyway. Okay, well, I've talked long enough. And for those of you who are still wondering who my team is, they are currently ranked number 3. And they sport 2 of my favorite colors, scarlet and gray. In fact, some of you may be able to recognize it by the small 3-letter word that we always put before the name of the college. Join us next month. Now, be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.